Chapter 8. A Bribe. It was 3 o'clock when they reached their hiding place. Jasmine fell asleep immediately, leaning against the trunk of a large tree, while John sat with Kismine, his arm around her, and watched the battle below in what used to be the garden. Shortly after 4 o'clock, the last gun made a loud banging sound and stopped working. With the end of the firing, the valley became quiet again. The embers of the two airplanes that had been shot down by the guns shone like the eyes of some terrible monster lying in the grass. The castle stood dark and silent, just as beautiful without light as it had been beautiful in the sun. John saw that Kismine, like her sister, had fallen sound asleep. It was long after 4 when John heard people walking along the path they had recently followed, and he waited in breathless silence until they had passed. John waited until the steps had gone a safe distance up the mountain. Then he followed. About halfway to the top of the mountain, the trees stopped growing, and there was nothing but rock. Just before he reached this point, he stopped and looked carefully around a large rock. Braddock Washington was standing there motionless, a black shadow against the gray sky of the early morning. While John watched, Washington remained still for a few moments, as if he were thinking. Then he ordered the two servants with him to lift the object which lay between them. As they struggled to their feet, the first yellow beam of the morning sun shone on a massive and beautifully cut diamond. The bearers staggered beneath its weight. After a while, the white man lifted his head and slowly raised his arms, like someone trying to get a large crowd to listen, but there was no crowd, only the vast silence of the mountain and the sky. Then he began to speak. "You, out there!" he cried out in a trembling voice. "You there!" He paused, his arms still lifted, his head held up, as if he was expecting an answer. John strained his eyes to see whether there might be men coming down the mountain, but there was no one around. There was only sky. Could Washington be praying? But it was impossible. The man's arrogant body language and attitude made it clear he was not praying. "Oh, you above there!" His voice was now strong and confident. He was not begging. If anything, he was condescending. John listened breathlessly, but could not fully understand, while the voice stopped, resumed, stopped, sometimes strong and aggressive, sometimes puzzled and impatient. Then an idea started to form in John's head. Braddock Washington was trying to bribe God. That was it. There was no doubt now. The diamond in the arms of his slaves was an advance payment, a promise of more to be paid in the future. That was what Washington was saying. For a while, he reminded God of other gifts he had accepted from men in the past. And now, Braddock Washington, the Emperor of Diamonds, King and Priest of Gold, would offer up a treasure unlike anything God had seen. "God, I will give you," Washington said, "the greatest diamond in the world. This diamond will be set in a great building of beaten gold, wonderfully carved with gates made of jewels. In the middle of the diamond, I will place my precious radium, and in this temple I will kill any victim you choose, even if it is the richest and most powerful man alive. In return, I ask only one simple thing, that the world go back to the way it was yesterday and stay that way. It's so very simple. Let me have my slaves and wealth again." Washington had never had to bargain with anyone else. His only doubt was not about whether God would listen, but whether he had made his bribe big enough. Of course God could be bribed. As he approached the end of his speech, his sentences became broken, short, and uncertain. His body tensed, and he seemed to strain to listen for an answer. He looked insane. Then, as John stared in fascination, it seemed to him that something strange happened all around him. It seemed like the sky became dark for an instant, like there was a sudden breath of wind. For a moment, the whole world was quiet and dark. The birds' songs ceased, the trees were still, and far away there was the sound of threatening thunder. That was all. The wind died quickly, the dawn returned, the sun sent hot waves of yellow over the land, and the leaves laughed in the sun. God had not accepted the offered bribe. Now John saw a movement down by the lake, and when he turned, he saw the airplanes landing. He slid off the rock and ran down the side of the mountain to the trees, where the two girls were awake and waiting for him. He took their hands, and in silence they walked through the trees. Behind them, from the valley, there were no sounds. When they had gone about half a mile, they began climbing a narrow path that led to the top of the hill. At the highest point, they paused and turned around. A broken, white-haired man was slowly descending the mountain, followed by two slaves who carried a bird in between them which still flashed in the sun. Halfway down, two other people joined them. John could see that they were Mrs. Washington and her son. Farther below, the attackers were running over the lawn in front of the castle, rifles in hand, and starting up the Diamond Mountain. The little group of five on the mountain now stopped upon a rock shelf. The slaves bent down and pulled open a door in the side of the mountain, and they all disappeared inside. Kismine clutched John's arm.
"Oh," she cried wildly, "where are they going? What are they going to do?"
"It must be some secret way of escape." A little scream from the two girls interrupted his sentence.
"Don't you see?" sobbed Kismine. "They are going to die. My father set up a system to destroy everything in case anyone found us. There are wires covering the whole mountain. Everything will be destroyed."
Just as she said this, the whole surface of the mountain changed suddenly to a burning yellow. Then, just as suddenly, the light disappeared, leaving behind only burnt embers and blue smoke. All plants, animals, and humans on the mountain had been killed. At the same moment, and with a massive boom, the castle was thrown in the air in flames and instantly destroyed. When the smoke cleared, all that was left was a huge pile of stone that had once been a house of jewels. All was quiet, and the three people were alone in the valley. For a moment, all three stared in shock at the destruction below them. The two sisters were crying softly. Then John cried,
"Let's leave this awful place!"
They started walking as fast as they could to get away from this terrible place of death and destruction. By the end of the day, John and his companions had reached the huge cliff that marked the end of the Washington's property. They sat down to finish the food which Jasmine had brought with her in a basket.
"There,"
Jasmine said, as she spread out a cloth and put the sandwiches in a neat pile upon it.
"Don't they look great? I always think that food tastes better outdoors."
"Now," said John eagerly, "let's see what jewels you brought along. If you brought enough, we should be able to live comfortably for the rest of our lives."
Kismine put her hands in her pockets and laid two handfuls of shining stones before him.
"Not bad," cried John with enthusiasm. "They aren't very big, but..."
"What?"
His face suddenly changed as he held one of them up.
"But these aren't diamonds."
"Oh no," said Kismine, looking surprised. "I'm such an idiot."
"These are rhinestones," cried John.
"I know," she started laughing. "I opened the wrong drawer. These belonged to a girl who visited Jasmine. I got her to give them to me in exchange for diamonds. I'd never seen anything except jewels or diamonds before."
"And this is what you brought?"
"I'm sorry, but anyway, I think I like these better. I'm a little tired of diamonds."
"All right," said John gloomily. "We'll have to live in Hades. And you'll regret that you opened the wrong drawer for the rest of your life."
"Well, what's wrong with Hades?"
"If I come home with a wife at my age, my father is not going to be happy."
Jasmine spoke up.
"I love washing,"
she said quietly. "I have always washed my own handkerchiefs. I'll do people's washing for them and support both of you."
"Do people wash clothes in Hades?"
asked Kismine innocently.
"Of course," answered John. "It's just like anywhere else."
"I thought that maybe it was too hot to wear any clothes,"
Kismine replied.
John laughed.
Just try it, he suggested. They'll chase you out of town.
Will Father be there?
She asked. John turned to her in astonishment.
Your father is dead, he replied. Why should he go to Hades?
After eating, they folded up the tablecloth and spread their blankets for the night.
What a dream it was,
Kismine sighed, gazing up at the stars.
It seems so strange to be here with one dress and a poor fiancé.
She paused for a moment, looking above.
Under the stars, she said. I never noticed the stars before. Now they frighten me. They make me feel that it was all a dream, all my youth.
It was a dream, said John quietly. Everybody's youth is a dream, a kind of insanity.
How pleasant it is to be insane!
That's what they say, said John gloomily. But I don't know anymore, because my youth is over now. Anyway, let's love each other for a while, for a year or so, you and me. That's a kind of insanity that we can all try. But I know that the only thing that is real in the whole world is diamonds, and I don't have any. He shivered. Button up your coat, little girl. The night's cold, and you'll get sick if you don't stay warm. Whoever invented the real world made a terrible mistake. So let's escape reality and lose ourselves in the land of dreams for a few hours. So wrapping himself in his blanket, he fell off to sleep.